turn up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello, Dan. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. The Browns concluding their first week of OTAs today, their third and final OTA of the week. They'll have three more next week, three more the week after that, and then, of course, the mandatory mini camp before they take their break for the summer, before training camp. Our Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday's OTAs? Number one. Number two, how much of this team's turnaround should fall on Hugh Jackson's shoulders? How much should fall on the players? Are we putting too much on Hugh Jackson to be the savior? We've got Joe Hayden's press conference from yesterday at 1:30. We've got Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, calling in to recap yesterday's OTAs and give his thoughts on this team. It's got Crow and Duke presser from yesterday at 2:30. And your phone calls and tweets, much, much more. Plus, game two tonight for the Cavs. Tyronn Lue looking to become the first coach in NBA history to open his career 10-0 in the playoffs with a win over the Raptors. He could do that. One of the topics we're talking about was obviously Hugh Jackson and the feeling. And everybody we've talked to, the players, it is palpably different. Chad Johnson tweeted out an hour ago, and I quote, "I talked with Hugh Jackson on Tuesday in length. I don't think the Browns organization, let alone fan base, understand the gem that's before them." So let's talk about it, Matt. Let's talk about the coach Hugh Jackson. Obviously, he's a positive, but you know what he can't do?
Play the game.
Can't put helmet on, can't put pads on, can't throw touchdowns, can't catch touchdowns, can't sack quarterbacks, can't do anybody from stopping it. So how much of this turnaround should fall on Hugh? How much of it is, in your opinion, going to be cultural, and how much of it is the players?
That's a great question. And I think the fact that we're having this conversation immediately takes me back to our interview with Bill Polian when I teed him up to say, hey, you know, how much different or how many wins can come by simply changing the culture and having players bought in? And he said zero.
Zero is what he said.
After speaking to players, after seeing practice, I think it's significant. I'm going to go smack dab right down the middle. 50-50. Because these guys are professionals, first and foremost. You know, we can talk about the young players. We can talk about the strife of some of the young players. You know, even Johnny Manziel, Justin Gilbert, just to name a two. And Justin Gilbert's out there, is getting praise from Joe Hayden, which we'll hear later in the show after yesterday's press conference. You talked about, you know, Justin Gilbert being solid. So his growth. So I think, given the opportunity, and I think in the workplace, and this is well beyond just the football field, if you feel motivated by your boss slash coach, if you feel uplifted by your boss slash coach, you're going to go that extra mile. And I think we've had players here before that haven't gone the extra mile, that there was a sense of entitlement or a sense of chill mode that sometimes players went into, and then they get, when January 1 comes, and most likely the last game of the season is played, they do their checkout meeting, all their checks have cashed, and they get to leave town. And you leave, you know, coaches, you know, getting hung out to dry, you leave the city hung out to dry, you leave a fan base, you know, going 13-3 again, 5-11, you know, what's going on? And then there's the turnover that has happened in Cleveland.
Sure.
And I really feel what's refreshing to me is, without playing a football game, we're nowhere near as an organization that I'm sure, you know, Jimmy Haslam, Sashi Brown, or Hugh Jackson want us to be. But I feel like we're standing on firm ground. We're not walking on eggshells. You know, we're not waiting for that wave to crash to knock us down. We're standing on solid ground, and a lot of that has to do not with the players, but with the man that is leading this football team in Hugh Jackson. And that's why I think 50% of it is going to be on him, his ability to motivate. And then, as I've said, offensively, what he's going to do for us because of the mind and because of his play-calling ability and his offense as a whole, will keep us in football games, get us first downs, score points, and potentially win us football games. And that's not without talking about anybody. That's not with a star-studded offense.
No.
That's Hugh Jackson and his offense with a hungry RG3 and two backs with votes of confidence from management by not bringing in another running back to compete. That's by drafting, you know, hungry wide receivers that have a lot to prove and vets that want to stay here in Cleveland. That's Gary Barnidge trying to duplicate what he did last year.
Sure.
That's going to win you football games. That's the other side of it. But a lot of it has to do with Hugh Jackson. And then I would almost say the robots, the talent, has to perform what they're coached to do. If they deviate from it, we know what happened. They deviated from that last year. And I think we'll hear that as I've read this morning, reading some of Joe Hayden's comments, talking about that defense. Guys weren't happy.
No.
You know, there were whispers
about it.
There was whispers in the locker room. He's not, you know, there were scheme issues. There were fit issues. There were role issues. The one thing that I can say, and I'm sure you can say the same thing, Hugh Jackson's not going to shy away from communicating with his players.
Oh, no.
Because if he's hiding anything, he's not going to have the 100% that I talked about yesterday.
Yeah, and that's the key. I don't think we're putting too much on his shoulders. I think we're putting, when you've gone through as a city and as an organization and you've seen the coaches that have come and gone, when you finally have a guy that you feel like is a legitimate coach.
And gets it. Gets where we're at, gets the city.
It gives you a lot of optimism because at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, you know this very well. Yes, you guys are professionals, and yes, you go out there, but Paul Kruger said it best. You still need that guy that can reach you and motivate you, despite the fact that you're being paid a lot to do it, to get that little extra out of you that makes a difference between winning and losing in a league that's built for parity. I think the coaches that are the best strategists and the best motivators will have success, provided that there is equal talent. Let's say you've got equal talent on both sides of the field. The coach that's the best strategist and the best motivator is going to win the majority of the time.
Yes.
So the Browns have, I believe, that part of it in pretty good standing. We've got to see it in the NFL, obviously. We've got to see him do it on Sundays. I think they've got that part of it. Now it's about getting the best out of the talent and getting your talent on par with the rest of the National Football League.
I agree with you. And just in me, you know, after a long-winded rant, you kind of go off. You know what this makes me think of? Not so much professional football, but how I have no problem, and I'm sure if it equates to progress and potential wins, I have no problem with Hugh Jackson the same way that Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, you know, are the faces of those collegiate programs. I have no problem with Hugh Jackson being the face of our franchise right now. And in time, based around everything that you just said, the players grow into their roles, the rookies grow up, the second-year players grow up, and then the production on the football field and the success that comes from Hugh being the face, Hugh's not going to change. He's not going to settle for anything less. He's going to be him, but the players have risen to the level that Hugh is at, and now exactly. They become the faces of this franchise. We're not just putting people on the poster because they've accomplished a lot as an individual. It's because they're winning and the culture here has changed and they deserve the right to be the face of a franchise.
And I still believe, and I could be wrong, but when you think of the Patriots, the first thing I still think of is Bill Belichick.
You have to.
And Tom Brady may be the greatest player of all time, but for
because
me,
without Bill,
I still think
is Tom Brady Tom Brady.
I think he's obviously pretty talented, but we'll never know.
If he was not a Patriot in the Bill Belichick era, is Tom Brady Tom Brady?
No clue.
I know. But I'm saying there's things that you can say. Wow, you throw your hands up and go, I don't know. Tom Brady's he's a great football player. But then there's so many intangibles that you bring in when he's not in that bubble that Bill Belichick has created for him to succeed in.
I know that there are not many quarterbacks who could have the success that Tom Brady did with the lack of talent at wide receiver that he's played with for the majority of his career. I mean, the time that he had Randy Moss, that's one thing.
Right.
But for them to get things out of a guy like Julian Edelman, a Wes Welker, who Miami had no use for him. Now, they were wrong.
San Diego Chargers cut him. He was an undrafted free agent in the class that I was in.
Yeah.
He went undrafted. They signed him our year, and Cam Cameron, who's now what, offensive coordinator at LSU, I think, or somewhere, cut Wes Welker. Wes Welker went to Miami, did what he did, and then ended up, of course, in New England.
I also think that, you know, you're right. It's part of it's the strategy. It's getting the best out. Could Andy Dalton have made the progress that he made last year without Hugh Jackson? And I think that's, you put a lot of it on Hugh Jackson, but I'll tell you, when you're a guy that knows how to get the best out of the quarterback, which is the most important position in the National Football League, a lot's going to be on you.
Yes.
And now you have an opportunity. And I said, we're going to find out if he can play or not, to work with the guy that many thought was the consensus number one A player in a draft, a absolute franchise changer that the Redskins traded everything to go get in Robert Griffin III. I think a lot's being put on Hugh, but I think it's justified, and I think it's because of what you feel when you're around Hugh Jackson. I think it's because of what you feel when you're around the players talking about Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, for Joe Hayden to sit up there and to say that Hugh Jackson is the best thing that's happened to the Cleveland Browns, that's big. We talked with Paul Kruger yesterday. I haven't heard Paul Kruger that excited about a coach.
It was like eyes big, like, whew.
Like,
you have no idea.
You have no idea. You have no idea what I've been through.
Right.
And you have no idea how good it feels to feel like I've got the guy now.
Right. And that's why I asked him the question yesterday. A guy like Hugh Jackson, at the right time in your career, can extend your career. Because if Paul, and with Hugh Jackson comes Ray Horton, you know, and you talked about the, you know, how Paul Kruger came to Cleveland to play in that scheme. So a lot of stars are lining up for Paul Kruger at the right time when, in drafting Emmanuel Ogbah, he's immediately one of the guys that goes, bubble guy, expensive, getting older, coming off of a non-productive year when you can't say a lot of people were very productive in that defense.
I hope he's here.
So that being said is, I hope he's here. And the great thing about it is, if he goes double-digit sacks, we're not going to even be having the same conversation about him 1 year older, more expensive, because he produced in the proper culture here in Cleveland, and he becomes the Joe Thomas on defense, a producing, you know, good guy, great, you know, culture builder, you know, not energy vampire, as he said yesterday.
Yeah, I love that.
And I just think that he's a guy that is not in doubt, because under Hugh Jackson's umbrella, he produced.
Yep.
That's all you can ask for.
That's all you've got to do. I mean, the slate is wiped clean. I can tell you just from being around some, you know, we'll talk about things that stood out, individual players that have stood out who look better to us. But I think this Hugh Jackson discussion is an interesting one. And I think a lot of it's on Hugh. A lot of it's on Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry to supply Hugh with the right players. But I think that until you have the winning mentality, it's tough. And when you have someone who, and you can tell that it's seeping through even to these guys. And I thought there was something so interesting that we heard yesterday from Paul. And that was that in the past, it seems like they were trying to not be bad.
Yeah.
And now you have a guy who's demanding that we do everything
Winning.
We can to be good.
Yes.
And I think it's a subtle thing, but I liken it to golf. When you're a golfer, and all you who play golf know this, if you're a golfer and you're on the tee, and let's say there is
water left,
and you're on the tee thinking, don't hit it left, just whatever you do, don't hit it left, you're probably going to hit it left, or you're going to hit it so far right that you may as well have hit it left.
Right.
But if you're a golfer who's like, all right, I'm just going to bust it right down the right center of the fairway, what water?
Because that's what I do. I hit my little, you know, power fade down the middle. I'm going to end up on the right side of the fairway. Water's not even in play for me, and I got a great angle into the green.
What water?
Right, exactly.
Gibbs knows what's like.
Spent some quality time in the pond yesterday.
Excellent. When we come back, we'll hear from the Show Me State president, Jason Gibbs, about what he thinks about this Hugh Jackson topic. And I want to hear from you. Do you think too much is being put on Hugh Jackson? Are you bought into the Hugh world order? What do you think about that? Let us know. 216-578-0850. As Damon the Dog Walker says, the Browns are a team named after a coach. Why not start with a coach to turn it around and let him be the face of our organization? Why not? Why not us? Why not now? I also finally got through all of Believe Land last night. I'll share some of my thoughts on that. And much, much more. Joe Hayden, bottom of hour number one. Jim Donovan, top of hour number two. Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson, bottom of hour number two. Loaded show for you here today on CBD on ESPN 850.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. All right, Gibbs, our big questions today about Hugh Jackson. What do you think?
I put it on the rundown because I worried that we're putting all our eggs in his basket and how much of this should actually fall on the players. You know, where's that happy medium? I don't know. And that's why I brought it up, because I feel like I think Hugh is definitely the guy. You know, it's the first time we've – if you go back and look at our coaches here since we came back, and I don't think there's a guy with a pedigree outside of Butch Davis who had success at the college level that has had the success that Hugh Jackson has had. And, you know, there's a guy that knows what he's doing, and I just worry that we're like we joke around, you know, in Hugh we trust and the Hugh world order and all that
Hugh world order.
You know, I mean, how much should we be putting on this guy? I mean, what are the realistic expectations, especially in year one?
Again, to me, it's about this team showing flashes. And we're going to get my big takeaway, and that is that I have seen flashes. And what you want during the season is more consistency. I'm not looking for a turnaround. He could shock the world. I mean, it's happened in the NFL.
4-12 to 12-4.
You lived it, bro.
I lived it, man. And I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs.
And you're real.
With
you're
Andy,
right here.
I'm right looking here, at you. Living it. Yeah. Talking about it. Kansas City Chiefs. You know, who was fired? Was it Herm Edwards? And Andy Reid,
I think. I'll look.
No, and Andy, when Andy Reid took over, they were 3-13. When Andy Reid took over, and they went 13-3.
Yes.
So those are the two that stick out in my mind, one that I was a part of.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. You look at the 49ers once Harbaugh came in. I mean,
they went, what, 5-11 to 13-3?
And that's kind of what one of the things that I would look at as a more modern example is Jim Harbaugh comes in, turns the 49ers around, Jim Harbaugh leaves, and it's a flipping disaster.
Correct. The one thing that I will say that the Charger team that I played for, I'm sure definitely holds supreme for the 49ers, because I was there as well. You know, that last year with Singletary, at least I followed them. That's when I got hurt and ended up signing with the Packers. The Kansas City Chiefs team, there was talent, though. And I'm not saying we're not talented. Talent had a big part of it. And I think that just goes to show how destructive having the wrong culture and the wrong coaches of a team can lead to losing seasons, and having the right guys, changing that culture, changing the offense and defensive schemes, putting guys in position to make plays and calling games differently can lead to success. And
yes,
you're going to get lucky. I mean, I'm sure if you go back and review our 12-4 season, or the Chiefs 13-3, or Harbaugh's first year, there were some luck games, you know, but not 10 luck games.
It was Romeo Crennel, by the way.
Romeo Crennel, you're right.
Todd Haley, then Herm, then Todd Haley, then Romeo Crennel, then Andy Reid. What did you say, Gibbs?
But you got to have luck to win. Periodically, you got to be lucky as much as you've got to be good. Sometimes.
And but you have to play your way, Gibbs. You got to play your way close enough for that luck to matter.
Correct.
You know?
Sure.
You got to be in the game long enough to get that bounce for that miraculous catch, and so on and so forth. And I think we've been on the other side of it significantly, because for one reason or another, all the stars just didn't line up. And it was more than wishing on a star. It was because we weren't well coached. We weren't a disciplined football team. We didn't have talent. We didn't have the quarterback. All those reasons led to our inability to get lucky in the right situations for it to win us football games.
Yeah.
Well, now my concern is a year from now, if we don't, you know, I mean, we've all said 5 wins, 6 wins, 7 wins, somewhere in there for this football team, probably. You know, are people going to turn on Hugh Jackson after one season? You would hope not, but is he going to be the scapegoat after year one if things don't necessarily go well, when really the man and his coaching staff, I've seen more coaching since him and his staff have come in here than at any time that I've covered the Browns.
Maybe even combined, other than when Norvall was out
but,
there.
So, I mean, that's going to be my question. Are they going to take the brunt of it? Are they going to be the scapegoats? Are people going to be willing to give these guys, you know, the time that they truly need to get this totally turned around?
I think so, yes. I think they know it is a multi-year plan. Again, for me, when you're asking what I'm looking for from the Browns, and I know that sounds crazy, but to me, to Nathan Zagura, me alone, winning is so important. That is the focus. Don't get me wrong. But for me, in terms of getting a sense of where I feel that this team is headed and the job that Hugh Jackson does will be less about the final record than it will be about the level of play in September versus the level of play in December. And if that play in December is better than September, significantly better, and you're starting to see those signs, I will feel like this is an absolute success. And I don't think that there's any reason even really right now to talk about Hugh's potential failure. I think Hugh is going to be successful. I believe that he is, and I believe that he will be given the time to do this. They know, when you look at the roster, when you bring in 14, draft 14 rookies, they know it's not supposed to happen overnight. They're still looking for the most important position in the National Football League. That's the quarterback. I think you're going to see more out of less, certainly less in terms of NFL accolades from this roster compared to the previous roster. You're going to see more from less, and that's how you're going to know it's a success.
And I think 2016 to me is going to be the year of lessons for this football team because, as you said, what you see out of them out of September, and as we know, based around our schedule with five of our first seven football games on the road, there's going to be some lessons learned, some of them productive lessons that can benefit us immediately throughout the remaining, you know, nine games of the season. And some are going to be hard lessons of the way we got to come on the road with our mind right. And a lot of things have to go well for this football team to win on the road.
And I think what Hugh's doing, the fact that this is even a topic and this went through your mind today, Gibbs, is smart. Hugh Jackson is the guy in this building that has actually had the most success at his job in the National Football League of anybody. And so in a way, what he's doing is putting a lot of it on him. If you're talking about Hugh Jackson and allowing his players to focus on work and not have to focus on being the face of this thing. So in some ways, I think what he's doing is very, very smart in that regard.
Right. Which, again, leads me to the second half is, first half of the season, 5-7 on the road. Good lessons, but yet hard lessons learned by this football team. What's encouraging is, and it goes back to my time in San Diego with Marty Schottenheimer is, and I'm not saying this is our expectation, but it's go 8-0 at home and split on the road. You're going to go 12-4. You're going to win your division. You're going to have your seat at the table and most likely be a 1, 2, or 3 seed based around what other teams do in the AFC. Okay, you're coming home when the ship should get righted after those tough lessons in the first half of the season, and you're going to be comfortable sleeping in your own bed. You're going to deal with the weather. It's the AFC North. You're going to deal with the weather regardless, okay? But you're going to be coming home in front of your fans, a packed-out First Energy Stadium, with a refined product and lessons learned from struggling or overcoming what it's like to play on the road in the National Football League, along with the development of the players, should see significant growth in those last eight games that allow you to go, A, we finished on a high note, which we haven't done in a very long time here, and B, you carry momentum and swagger and confidence that A, Hugh is the right guy, that B, Sashi Brown and what he has done in 1 year is significant, and C, some of the guys that we thought were cast-offs or were written off by this fan base are now back in our good graces, and we have a pool of young talent that got some trial by fire by playing very early in the process. And then, boom, here comes May. Guess what? We got 2 firsts, 2 seconds, 3rd. We got another 10, 12 picks to add to what we do. We have a free agency period that people are going to know. The buzz will be out. Look the way the Browns finished. Look at what Hugh Jackson did in 1 year.
Even in our best year, which was the first year of Mike Pettine, we finished
0-5.
Right. So that puts a bad taste in your mouth. I think the last guy who had a strong finish, correct me if I'm wrong, Gibbs, was Mangini, right? Won the last four games, I believe, in one of his years as the coach of the Browns. All right, let's go to Steve in Fairlawn. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I'm excited today. Good show, as always.
Thank you.
The thing that I'm looking for as a Browns fan coming into this year, man, is that we see, as fans, hard-nosed players playing hard for 60 minutes. That's a big one. It's really hard as a fan when your team's losing, you pour so much emotion into it to see guys sitting on the sidelines laughing or off the field issues. I think last year I remember a press conference where Pettine was talking about his day's plan included going to court to testify for Johnny Manziel. And when you got a team that's all over the place like that, not concerted, not like what Hugh Jackson's describing to us now, if we see a team, I mean, just speaking for myself, if I could see a 4-12 team that played hard to the end, maybe we lost a couple on bad calls or something, but our team was in it, and you're watching these young guys develop, I'm excited, man. I'm excited to see what this team's going to look like, even though my expectations aren't real high. I guess I'm more optimistic about this team than I have been in about 15 years, so that's about all I got.
I agree with you, and thank you so much for the call, Steve. I won't guarantee that this team's going to win X number of games, but I will guarantee you this. It will be better coached, better prepared. You will see a better product on the field, and you will see maximum effort. And if you're not seeing it, those people will not be playing, nor
Correct.
Will they remain Cleveland Browns.
I agree. And I think, long story short, based on what the caller said and based on what you said, is that the 71,000 people that will come to First Energy Stadium late into the year in those home games will have a product to be proud of because of the style of football that we play. And that's something that has concerned me for a very long time with the laissez-faire approach in practice and coaching.
Just wait till camp.
Right. And I mean, and just overall, the inability of your playmakers to make plays when called upon.
Yeah, we want to see it. One of the guys that's a playmaker for this team that is going to be called upon to make plays and return to his Pro Bowl form that he first earned under defensive coordinator Ray Horton is Joe Hayden. We have his words, his first words talking to the media this year, up next.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you. Let's go to the podium now and hear from Joe Hayden, the Browns Pro Bowl cornerback, on his rehab with his ankle injury and what he can expect in 2016.
Joe, what stage are you at with this thing as far as the progress is?
Progress is going pretty good. I mean, I got out of my boot yesterday, so that was a big step. I was on the scooter to the boot, and now I'm walking around weight-bearing, and the process is going along really well.
Is there a timetable for when you're going to be back on the field, Joe?
No, there's still no timeline. I'm just working every day, you know, with the training staff. I'm here 5 days a week, you know, just doing treatment, and it's just going along really well.
Happened in... How frustrating was it to, you know, I guess, have the setback when you're trying to come back from last year's stuff?
Yeah. It was really frustrating, you know. I wasn't really expecting it, but now that it's done and we're moving forward with it, I'm really happy about where the process is going and how far along I am right now.
But how did
something
happen?
I heard it last season in the Arizona game.
No,
then when I was training during the offseason, you know, I re-aggravated it.
Is it tough? I mean, you had last year, you know, we all know what you went through last year.
Mm-hmm.
How are you dealing with, you know, another setback? I don't know if it's going to cost you any real time, but, mm-hmm. you know, how are you dealing with that coming off last year's difficulty?
I'm dealing with it really well, man. I got a really positive attitude, you know. Just prayer life, the new coaching staff, Coach Hugh Jackson, him being here, having faith in me, trusting me, and definitely just believing in me, knowing what type of player I am, not really feeling like I have to come out and prove to him what I can really do. You know, just him having that confidence gives me a lot of confidence in myself and doesn't make me feel like, you know, it's a whole new staff. You got to prove yourself from ground one. We played against Cincinnati before. He kind of knows what I could do.
How about Ray Horton? Talk about having him back as here.
super excited about that, man. They always talk about, they sent me to my first Pro Bowl. That was my first year when I made it to the Pro Bowl, when him and my same DB coach, Coach Lou Trophy. So just having the familiarity with those dudes, man, it feels good for me.
Being out all this time, you've been here since you last played, do you have newfound hunger for the game, appreciation for the game?
I mean, definitely. You know, it's been a long, it never really went through any type of adversity like this. Playing football has always kind of been pretty good, you know. So just being able to go through something like this, you know, it definitely brings a newfound respect for, newfound love, passion, you know, saying missing it, just not being able to be out there with my guys, sometimes feeling like I'm in the way a little bit, just don't really like that feeling at all, knowing that I'm a leader on this team and a person that's going to be making a big impact depending on wins and losses, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm just really excited to just keep pushing. And then with Coach Hugh here, Coach Horton back, Coach Louie, just the atmosphere and just the way that Coach Hugh makes the players, the ways he talks to us, the way he makes us feel, man, it's something I never felt since I've been in Cleveland. I say this to everybody that asks me. I think Coach Hugh's the best thing that's happened since I've been here. So, I mean, everything's going in the right direction.
Things just, the vibe wasn't good. I mean, the vibe wasn't good amongst the players. There were whispers. It just seems like as defensive guys, there's almost like a healing going on. You guys are re-energized. You're excited and happy about everything.
It was a lot of stuff that shouldn't have been talked about. Too many whispers, too many people worried about too many things. Nowhere is everybody worried about football. It was just too many other things going on. It's just when players play, coaches coach, ownership does their thing, you know what I'm saying? It's just too many other aspects, people trying to get involved in too many situations. It was a little bit messy. But it's a completely different feel, completely different vibe. Players play. That's what we do. We came here to win, and that's all that Hugh's talking about.
Joe, how much do you think not playing much, not being able to do much in training camp last year because of that hamstring injury, how do you think that affected your season when the games you did play?
I think it was a little bit. You know, you got to definitely get a little bit of rust off. I'm not going to come back being in tip-top shape. But, you know, it's going to take a little bit. But, you know, I'm going to be working my butt off. And definitely since this whole situation that's been going on, I'm just ready to play, ready to grind. So I'm going to be doing everything I got to do to get back to that top level.
Hugh Jackson mentioned to us last month or something that you were a little bit, you know, dismayed by, you know, the talk or the reports or whatever, that you might not be ready for the season opener. Did that upset you? And if so, why?
Yeah, it was a little upsetting. You know how they, because I just feel like the way that I'm going to be working and the way that I'm going to try to get back, I mean, I think I'm going to be back definitely for sure, not to miss any regular season time. You know, I don't really know about training camp. That's the goal, try to get back. But, you know, I just know for sure that my whole thing is I'm not missing any games.
Who are the guys on the defense, personnel-wise, who make you think that this unit can surprise this year?
Double D, he's a natural born leader. You know, I can tell by his passion and the way he comes in and works every day. Kirksey, he's been developing so much, and he's trying to get that. He's getting developing into that leadership role of just a lot of the players that we have now. It's not just talk. It's more actions speak for the leaders. Like, we got people that are just working hard. Danny Shelton is by far one of the hardest workers and one of the most just happy guys you want to be around. So, I mean, just the in-house competition we have, we don't have any egos. It's just everybody fighting for a spot, everybody trying to get better. Nobody feels entitled to anything. So, I mean, with that atmosphere and that vibe, you have no choice but for people to grind and for no choice for people to get better.
So how has your role changed going back to Ray Horton's system? Does it change a lot from what you were doing the last couple of years?
No, not really. Not really. Still man.
Guy, yeah. Take the best guy.
Yeah. Joe, you were here when they tried to trade for RG3. What are your thoughts about adding him now, and what have you seen from the little bit you've seen of him?
Man, I've seen that he's he has something to prove. He feels like people aren't looking at him as the way when he came out of college. You know, and I think that he still has that talent. I know he feels like he still has that talent, that ability to be a starting quarterback in the league. And the same thing, like I say, with everybody. Everybody's here to compete. Like, we have just competitive guys, and he doesn't have no ego. He's just ready to work, ready to grind, put his nose down every day, and just out there trying to get better.
Joe, can you talk about that? Obviously, we see you at the the Chaos Games and enjoying it and enjoying the atmosphere. Do you guys want some of that feeling? You know, the Cleveland Browns. Do you want
That's
some
not
of
even
that?
That's a question. You know the answer to that.
I guess how badly do you guys want to bring that same excitement to the city that the Cavs are doing right now?
I actually saw that Believeland thing. I saw you on there, Tony, doing your thing. But I saw that Believeland thing, and that thing, it just made me want to. I embrace Cleveland. I feel like I am a part of Cleveland. I was in Maryland. I didn't really have a football team to really support. So just being able to come here, seeing how the fans are, seeing how much they really, really love and support the team, and they just want a winner, and they stay behind the Browns even though we keep taking all these L's. I feel with the team we have now, with the coaching staff we have now, it's an opportunity. Everybody has an opportunity to change that, to make this thing special. And if we can make the football team win out here, the Cavs know. I talk to Tristan all the time. He knows if the Browns were winning like the Cavs were, it'll be a whole different vibe. Not to knock it at all, but it just is what it is. So just being able to know how much love that they show the Cavs and how much the fans are still supporting the Browns, even though we haven't really given them anything to be proud of, it just shows that when we could do flip it around, it's going to be special. And we know that. We honestly, seriously do know that.
When the Browns spend their top pick on a new wide receiver who's real fast and confident, does that get a cornerback's attention? And have you been checking out Coleman a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I've been checking Coleman out a whole lot, man. I mean, I've really liked him coming out of Baylor. I actually kicked him with him out in Vegas. We both are signed with Jordan, so I met him out there and we got to hang out a lot. And he loves the people that we brought in. It's just people that love the game and just want to be great. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to come in. He wants to work. He wants to make an impact. He wants to be an impact player on the team. And that's really all you can ask for.
Obviously, you guys thought you had one of the best secondaries in the league, and you had injuries to deal with, and now Dante Whitner and Deshaun Gibson are gone. What's your level of optimism, confidence that this secondary can surprise people with you coming back, even though those other guys aren't here? How do you feel about the whole unit?
I think a secondary is going to be – it's a sleeper right now, but I feel like we can be special. With IC, people don't really pay attention to him as much. He's a really, really smart player. And like Coach said, we got Poyer. We brought in Raheem. It's just opportunities. It's just opportunities and competition. And that's going to bring out the best in people. With myself, Tremont, Justin Gilbert, and Kaywon. I think Kaywon is honestly one of the best nickels in the league, just being able to put hands on people and do his job with as far as blitzing and handling the slots. I think we're going to be able to surprise a lot of people, for one, because we got a lot to prove. It's all grind, you know what I'm saying? So we don't feel like nobody – we feel like a lot of people are counting us out. So that chip is what's going to make us a whole lot better, I feel like, this season.
You mentioned Justin. He's obviously struggled his first couple of years here. You know, like a top 10 first-round draft pick, imagine. You know, he's one of the leaders on the defense. I know you've tried to work with him.
Right.
But have you seen anything different with him here over these last couple of months under the new coaching staff and another offseason?
Yeah, I think he feels this. I think he feels the same way everybody does in the building as far as a new start. With this Coach Hugh bringing in that, it's competition and just giving you that feeling of belief. He believes in everybody that he has on this team. I mean, he said otherwise they wouldn't be here. So just with Gilbert feeling like that, feeling like the coaches have his back, feeling like the players have his back, he's just been working his tail off, and that's all you can ask for. It's just because he has all the ability in the world, but you just gotta just get it done on the field. So I mean, I'm excited for Justin to be able to, just from what I've been seeing from these couple of weeks that we've been out there, he's just been working, just been grinding, just been trying to study, and just that's all I can ask for.
Joe Haden, some positive stuff. I like it. Last year they were talking about how they were the Seattle Seahawks. This year there aren't expectations, no. And now they feel like they can come out and exceed them. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do in the defensive backfield. And, you know, Jamar Taylor's come in. He's filled in nicely. Justin Gilbert's playing as a starter, and you saw that yesterday.
It can only help him grow and develop.
Yeah, and you know what the good thing about it was? Last year, when he would be forced into prominent roles, whether it be Hayden's injury, whether it be Tremont, or they were trying to figure it out, you immediately noticed that he was on the field, and that was, I mean that in a bad way.
Target.
This year, you just don't even notice that he's on the field, which right. I think is a good thing.
Very good thing.
It's a good thing. So hopefully the secondary can't surprise people here in 2016. All right, 216-578-0850. Jim Donovan at the top of the hour. We'll take your phone calls leading up to that as well here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. By the way, I don't know if either of you saw this or not, but Alabama has made a scholarship offer to an eighth grade linebacker.
What is that all about? Like, the kid can't sign. He can't agree or anything.
Verbal, man.
No, you can't even verbal.
You know what that says? You know what that says to me? Mason's got 6 years.
Yeah, there it is.
I got 6 years to whip him into shape.
To be fair, they only did this because they offered a scholarship to Jesus. Jesus Machado. That's his name.
Okay. Well. And what, he's a class of what, like 2022?
The Crimson Tide aren't the only ones interested in Jesus, a 6-foot, 195-pound defensive prospect from Hialeah Champaign Catholic School. In addition to his new Alabama offer, Machado has also received verbal offers from Iowa State, Michigan State, NC State, and West Virginia.
How good could you possibly be at that age?
How could they know? Like, the guy's 6-foot, 195. How could they know?
I don't know.
That makes absolutely no sense to me. In what way, shape, or form, what is this kid doing? Where's the film on this kid?
the huddle app.
I mean, seriously, how do they find out about this kid? Is there some coach from Alabama going to this middle school?
You know what I think
game?
It is. You know what I think it is. Is as you recruit, a certain high school in his area, a high school coach probably goes, "You got to see this eighth grader we're going to get next year," and then information is exchanged, and it's a shot in the dark, for God's sakes. You know, he could get hurt. He could quit football. He could not be good at the next level. Who knows?
It really is crazy. Now, Dylan Moses made headlines in February of 2013 when he earned an offer from LSU as an eighth grader. He went on to commit to the Tigers, but has eventually backed off of that pledge, is now open in his process, and is considered a five-star recruit. So, who knows?
That's fine, but I just don't get it. Like, who is scouting middle school games?
Scotty Buckeye. We know that. Scotty Buckeye. I'm surprised he doesn't Ohio State hasn't made an offer.
I'm surprised you haven't got – your phone isn't ringing right now, Gibbs.
Yeah, Scotty Buckeye's all over that.
There's this kid.
He could break him down.
New Albany Middle School.
He plays at St. Mary's of the Falls. He's got some talent. Could play DB. He's a versatile athlete.
I know we like to poke fun at Scotty Buckeye, but I will say this. He did tell me about Terrell Pryor like 7 years before Terrell Pryor showed up at Ohio State. He'd been talking about him. So what's that, sixth grade? He did.
Jeez.
All he did was get one of the most legendary football coaches in Ohio State football history fired. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Scotty Buckeye.
Anger.
Thanks
anger. A lot, hot Scotty take. Could've, hot
take
take
him to Penn State.
Well, Wilhelm, I know you're off on July the 19th, but that has been the day that has been chosen for you guys. Remember in the Radiothon, the foundation, Cleveland Browns Foundation Radiothon, where two people bid on the right to co-host CBD with me. Well, it just so turns out one of them was Scotty Buckeye, and the other is Cleve T.A.
Nice.
Tarit Adam. They will be co-hosting with me on July the 19th. So that's going to be a show you will not want to miss.
That should be highly entertaining.
It is going to be highly entertaining. Scott.
This could take a whole different level.
Scotty Buckeye goes, "Is it possible to have negative ratings?" Because he said, "I think that's what I'm going to get." I was like, "No, you're going to be so bad, it's going to be good. It's going to be like the appeal of a train wreck or a car crash." That's what Scotty Buckeye is going to bring to
the league. Just can't turn the dial. Just can't look away.
Our good friend Bob in Millersburg, Bama was Scotty, my third-grade nephew, till they discovered his PED use.
Bob. You got to like that.
Seriously. I just want to know how that comes about, that people all of a sudden start looking at middle school kids.
I do know that when Jason Kidd was in eighth grade, because I played basketball in the Bay Area at that time, when Jason Kidd was in eighth grade, he was being recruited by colleges because he was like 6'4", dunking on people and was absolutely dominant. In basketball, I could see it more than football, because football is such a physical game that your development plays such a key role in it from a physical standpoint.
I mean, 6 foot, 195. What if he doesn't grow? You know?
Right.
6 foot, 210. I mean, I guess that was probably Ryan Shazier at Ohio State and then grew into.
But it was a speed machine.
Correct.
But you want to, like, get the whole, fill the kid with a sense of entitlement. I mean, what is that doing for that kid? Are you really helping that kid by offering him a scholarship in eighth grade?
No.
Or his family, for that matter?
Okay. Brian Kane, who is one of the friends of the show, listens to the show all the time, just tweeted me a Bleacher Report article. I'm going to favorite this so I go back and look at it later.
I'm looking at it right now.
With film on Jesus.
I mean, here's the thing.
Top 10 Papa Dines, whatever that is. Have you heard of that? Papa Dines?
No.
I guess
that's mom's basement.
Youth1.com is something that ranks these young kids. Alan Papadine says, top 10 national prospect as a seventh grader. After he's finished with the middle school, he'll be playing at the Florida-Georgia Future Stars game this summer at IMG Academy. While it's difficult for many to grasp how such a young prospect is already fielding offers for some of the most elite programs in the nation, that's the nature of the business today. Schools are going to look at any young player who shows a glimpse of promise as early as possible. They can get an edge no matter how small that edge may be. I mean, listen, where were these people at when I was dropping, 25 and 35 a game in eighth grade?
I'm watching this video. I'm not sure that there's the only people that have hit puberty on this field are the referees. I'm fairly confident in that. Like, what is this? Okay, so the kid's got some height. I can't believe I'm watching eighth grade cut-ups. Is he going to be in eighth grade this year, or was this like seventh grade tape?
I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, I just watched 12 seconds
and
it already made me laugh.
There's 4 minutes and 9 seconds. I'm a minute and one into this.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Oh, man. I am speechless as well. The good news is when we come back, there will be no one speechless. When we have Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, we'll talk about OTAs, the Browns. We'll talk about a little bit about Hugh Jackson. And also, Jim made quite a few appearances in Believe Land. We'll talk to him about that experience as well. It's all coming up next here on Cleveland Browns Daily.